I am your host, William Cooper.
She packed my bag last night, free flight. 0 hour, 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high as a kite by then. Just my job, 5 days a week.
Welcome once again to the hour of the time, the only hour that ever was, ever will be, or that is. This is the hour that you will decide your future, and thus our collective futures. Last night's broadcast was incredible. And because we just barely touched the tip of the iceberg, Vladimir Terzisky has consented to come back tonight and maybe for one more cast. We'll see how it goes tonight. And talk about these incredible flying machines that was developed many, many, many years ago that people now call flying saucers or UFOs. And we left off with the development of several models of flying saucer-type craft by the Germans during World War II and before World War II. And I believe we were talking about the development of the first jet aircraft when we had to sign off in our last episode of the Hour of the Time. So once again, I'd like to welcome you, Vladimir, to the broadcast. And I tell you once again what a pleasure it is to have you with us and to be able to bring some of this hidden technology out into the open so that the common man, people just like you and I sitting in the living room who haven't had access to this, can finally, for once in their life, begin to see the light at the end of the tunnel, get some answers put into their life for some of these questions that that people can't get answers to. Why is this technology, why is this hidden? Why when you go to find out these things and you go to research it, like you and I both found out, there are so many blocks put in our way. We find that books have been classified and taken out of libraries, and we find that librarians raise their eyebrows and go off and make a phone call and things.
We find that Orwell is an understatement. In many cases,
you're talking about George Orwell.
George Orwell and his 1984 scenario is an understatement. In many cases,
correct.
The way such sensitive information is treated. Before Abdul, I would like to thank you for inviting me again to this show and to share a little thought that just came across my mind. You know, I came to this country as a political dissident, as a political refugee and a dissident from Eastern Europe. In Japan, instead of studying physics, I was digging into Russian dissident literature, into basically dissident literature about world communist affairs, about Eastern Europe, about socialism in general, Russia in particular. Back in my country, I still had a secret dream as a physicist to make my little discovery. And that dream was to discover how anti-gravity works. Funnily enough, I was able to answer my dream, to find the answer to that dream, through my dissident diggings into alternative scientific, quasi-scientific or non-scientific, let's call it anthropological literature.
Sure.
And I'm extremely happy to be on your show here because in your face I see someone who is worthy to be called the American Sakharov. Let's make some parallels between the two evil empires. I think it is high time to make an analogy between the two evil empires. When the Dzerzhinsky statue was toppling on that famous, ominous Lubyanka Square, I had another vision in my mind that maybe a similar statue would someday be toppling somewhere in Langley, Virginia, on another famous square.
I think that just possibly might happen if enough Americans wake up, as this country has.
It is all in our hands. With the collapse of the Russian bear, now the Russian bear is a paper bear, it's not a real bear anymore. This country, the ruling elite of this country, is desperately in need of a new external enemy, and preferably a long-term one. Saddam Hussein footed the bill for a short time. He was a short-term enemy. If there is an invasion in Cuba or possibly Yugoslavia to stop the unrest there, these still will be the Panama invasion. These are just short-term enemies. We are desperately in need of a long-term enemy. And some of the stories, some of the scenarios that I've been hearing on the speaker circuit of American ufology, that possibly some alien race may come and invade us in the near future. These could be
other species from some other planet.
Yeah, but this is a story of another future program, possibly. I'm extremely happy to be on your show, and what you are doing here is unfortunately too few Americans are doing. I think that it's high time for America to look back at Mother Russia and to see how Russian dissidents were fighting with their evil empire for more than half a century. Many of them died, thousands, and millions of them died in the concentration camps. 60 million people went through the camps.
Yes, at least 60 million people that can be accounted for.
20 did not return, maybe more than that.
Sure.
But this is the Russian end of the population equation. This is how the Russian secret elite, in collusion with the secret elite of the other country, were trying to solve the population equation. Anyway, back to the secret technologies and to the German anti-gravity research and development. My feeling is that in this particular country, the secret services, the CIA, the NSA in particular, with their tremendous... They snoop not only on terrestrial, but also on extraterrestrial communication. Their biggest problem is to find immediately if somewhere, somehow, an inventor appears with a strange invention. Many of the inventions happen by people that have no formal education, are not in the databases, and suddenly, one day they come with an incredible conception that works on top of that. Once such a person is discovered, he will be either bought off or silenced, or his whole lab, drawings, books, and sometimes even he himself would disappear. This is how the secret societies have been safely locking into their safes any new technology that is more than 15 years ahead of its time.
Especially technology which threatens one of the four methods of controlling populations, such as energy, food, money, or fear.
Absolutely.
And the main one that is in the hands of the average man to develop, if he has any brains at all, it has to do with energy.
Exactly.
T. Townsend Brown. I'm sure in your research you've run across the name Thomas Townsend Brown. The same thing happened with him. He developed a saucer shape or disc shaped craft that he actually flew, demonstrated. But it was a different type of technology that we discussed in the last program. His craft was basically a capacitor.
Yeah.
And
flying capacitor.
Right, and by
no moving parts.
That's
any
right.
Third world nation can make a capacitor.
Absolutely. And he was able to charge this with enough electricity to where the craft, I don't really understand how it happened, but I know that it flew. And I know that immediately he was approached by the Office of Naval Intelligence. His entire lab was packed up. His technology disappeared, all of his notes and books and drawings. And the next thing you know, he's a naval officer attached to the Office of Naval Research.
Exactly.
And never talked about his invention again.
Exactly.
I don't know what they did to coerce him into doing
that. He was smart enough to sell himself. Basically,
well, he stayed alive. He said, well, you know, I know you're going to take all of my technology with you. If I keep my mouth shut, will you let me go and work on it? That's probably what he said.
Yeah, exactly.
And he derived no benefit from any of it for the rest of his life, and certainly it was not used in the war or anything to protect his country, so the excuse of national defense didn't even...
At the time of a phony Cold War, of a Mickey Mouse Cold War, that we know that behind the back of this Cold War, raging Cold War, quote-unquote, they had tacit, quiet cooperation in the exploration of the moon, Mars, with the creation of the survival and evacuation colonies there, and way beyond the solar system, with governmentally produced incredible flying saucers, basically along the Star Trek scenario.
NASA has actually functioned as the Roman circus in this passion play.
Absolutely, and we'll come to that. I think another interesting program that we can do together will be on free energy. This is a topic that I would love to talk, and we can talk as long as we talk about. We've been talking about German UFOs. So back to the UFOs and back to where we were last night. We ended with the first operational fighter saucer, turbojet fighter saucer, developed as a joint project, mega project, by D'Alonso, Mitte, and Schriever, the three luminaries of the German anti-gravity R&D. On its first flight, it reached an altitude of 20 kilometers, which is 6,000 feet. No plane at the time could reach this altitude. At its second flight, it reached 24.
You said
60,000 feet.
Okay.
On its second attempt, it reached 76,000 feet. And the rumors are that it could make as much as 4,000 kilometers an hour in the subsequent models. From the initial 8 turbojets inside the craft that were spinning the whole airframe, including the fuel tank, but keeping the cabin stationary in the middle, stabilized as usual. The Germans later developed a lot more advanced version that had a single custom-made donut-shaped turbojet engine. If you do a topological transformation in 3D space of a standard salami shaped turbojet engine, if you flatten it, shorten it, and flatten it to the shape of a pancake, and then open a hole in the middle, you don't need the middle anyway, then you can drop the cabin in that hole, gyroscopically stabilize it, it would not spin. Everything else around that cabin would be spinning. The whole hull of the ship would be spinning one way. The insides of the ship, in this case, the air compressor that is coupled to the gas turbine would be spinning the other way. Incredibly simple. This was kerosene burning, air breathing turbojet saucer made of the alloys that they were using for their airplanes. The navigation equipment was the same. Everything was the same. They were just utilizing a different physical principle that is so simple and childish. I've been carefully observing publications, even in Scientific American, which is basically a secondary school level physics publication, judging from European school standards. Even in that magazine...
I'm glad you say that, because judging from the standards here in this country, it's nowhere near a secondary school publication. Secondary schools have sunk to the level of... I'll tell you the truth. People used to come out of the 8th grade in the 1800s know more about reading and writing and arithmetic than people who come out of our secondary schools in this country today. But that's another subject. But
I wouldn't... Well, unfortunately, I've been discovering that our education system in an Eastern European country that fights with Romania for the place before the last European country, Albania, has a... Fortunately enough, we got our education system from Germany. We just copied everything from there. Compared to our education system, the American public school education system looks like a third world backward country education system, which is no coincidence at all. On the contrary, it's designed to lower the standards of this country, to make it equal to the standards of lesser developed countries so that a one world government can take place.
That's correct.
Back to the German craft. So the Belong to Me Teshuva disc eventually was developed, they utilized this donut-shaped, custom-made turbojet engine. The interesting thing about this saucer is that it probably was able to go into suborbital flights, and even into orbital flight. This is a funny story that I've read in a contractee book published by Wendell Stevens, probably one of the best publishers of UFO contactee literature in the country. But in one of the accounts of such a contact with an extraterrestrial race, they mention that they have flying saucers on their planet, several types, but one of the type can fly only inside the atmosphere, and if the pilot gets careless and takes a craft outside and away from the atmosphere, then another craft of an interplanetary capability has to go and fetch the wayward ship and bring it back. And a turbojet engine is a very good candidate for an engine that can work only inside the atmosphere.
Sure.
But having a tremendous velocity, it could easily propel the craft into a suborbital and even an orbital flight. There are two interesting things of anti-gravity physics that I would like to discuss here. Namely, and these are the two magical keys to the saucer kingdom. Number one, when anti-gravity starts working, it negates the mass of the object. Because the Germans were spinning the fuel tanks with a whole hull, the only thing that wasn't spinning in the craft was the cabin in the center.
Mm-hmm.
The fuel was losing its weight too. So basically, you would it would be very easy, very fuel-wise, it would be very economical to keep that craft in flight. Despite the fact that these crafts were gas guzzlers, there was absolutely no way to attain the altitudes and the speeds with a conventional non-anti-gravity technology. So the first magical key to the saucer kingdom, to the energy efficiency of the saucer kingdom, is the negation of the gravitational mass. The second magical key is the negation of the inertial mass. What it means is that it's like the car that you drive would still have the same engine of 100 horsepower, but suddenly it would weight as much as if made of styrofoam. And it would be as easily acceleratable as if made of styrofoam. With such a car, you can beat any Formula One car without a problem, because the power to mass ratio would be almost infinite. So the disappearance of the inertial mass is the second and most important and very carefully covered up magical key to the saucer kingdom.
But it's not covered up very well, because we know that space capsules that we've shot into space that have come back to Earth have lost weight. We know this. NASA has released those figures. They haven't explained it, but they have released those figures. And we know that this craft, while it's orbiting the Earth, is spinning all the time.
Well, this is a very interesting phenomenon that I've heard several times mentioned before, but I've kind of excluded from my worldwide anti-gravity picture. But it's a little bit different phenomena. It proves that gravity is a relative thing, and the force of gravity is a relative thing, and it depends not only on the mass and the difference between two attracting bodies, but on other phenomena that happen, which we can talk later. But which helps us understand how certain physical experiments or metaphysical yogi techniques can both decrease or increase the weight of an object. Gravity is, as a variable, depends on other physical variables, not only on mass and distance, as our university physics teaches us. Anyway, because of these two magical keys, the negation of both the gravitational and the inertial mass, even a turbojet saucer can fly into suborbital and even an orbital flight. Not only that, but I've heard rumors that even a ramjet supersonic plane can go into an orbital flight. Actually, the story is about the American SR-71 that was on a reconnaissance flight over Russia way after Gary Powers was shot with his U-2 and spoiled the Russian-American relations for a long time.
I think that was intentional.
Of course. Oh, I mean, it's
I think that's what Lee Harvey Oswald was doing in the Soviet Union, was giving them the information that they needed to be able to shoot down a U-2, and I think he was sent there by naval intelligence to do that, because there was a lull in the Cold War. Khrushchev was actually getting friendly with the United States, and it wasn't time for that. His name wasn't Gorbachev.
So the story is that one bright sunny day at 33,000 meters, which is close to 100,000 feet up there above Mother Russia, the pilot of the SR-71 got a radar lock on by an approaching Russian anti-aircraft rocket.
Mm-hmm.
He got scared. He floored the thing to the metal, and next thing he knew, he was in Earth's orbit. This is a rumor. But I've talked to people at Lockheed, and they verified that pilots are dead scared to press the accelerator on that thing, because it would go into suborbital flight until the engines flame out, and then he has to read his paper up there and wait for the thing to re-enter the atmosphere.
Go ahead.
So... it is actually quite easy to go into an Earth orbit with technologies that are different and much easier from the rocket technology NASA and the Russians have been using. And this is all very carefully staged and orchestrated smokescreen that we will talk, for the purposes of that, we will talk later.
Sure.
After the Dolon Sumitish River turbojet disk, the natural evolution of the genealogy of German anti-gravity engine development takes us inevitably to the rocket engines. At the end of the war, the Germans had about 150 different models of all classes of rockets, from small shoulder launch Stinger type anti-aircraft rockets to giant two-stage ICBMs. Four of these were fired at the United States.
Did any of them reach the United States?
Well, it's an interesting story. I think the first space flight with rockets on this planet happened in the late 30s and early 40s, when the Germans started firing their winged, manned version of the V-2 rocket, which, according to an article by General Walter Dornberger, who was the in charge of Peninian Day, and this is a story from...
Peninian was where the rocket research...
Yeah, the rocket research. I mean, the German Cape Kennedy.
Yeah.
On the Baltic coast, almost up north from Warsaw, quite to the east from Germany, away from England and the Allies. So the V-2 would reach an altitude of 120 kilometers, which is about 20 kilometers above the usual heights of the orbits of the Voskhod, the Gemini, and the Mercury capsule. So the first suborbital flights were not by Walter Schirra in the late 50s, but by Germans in the early 40s, 15 years earlier. The Germans developed a two-stage giant ICBM called the America Rakete, the America rocket. The second stage was a standard V-2, but the first stage was, I mean, a V-2 is about three stories tall. The first stage was about six stories tall. So the total rocket was about 10 stories tall. We're talking about